Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. The results of the gubernatorial race on Tuesday night were a lot closer than many people expected. Incumbent two-term Democratic Governor Peter Shumlin edged out Republican candidate Scott Milne by just over 2,000 votes. Shumlin received 46% of the vote, Milne got 45%, and Libertarian Dan Feliciano got just over 4%. Shumlin has claimed a narrow victory, but is this election over? It might not be. Scott Milne said yesterday he's considering a recount. He's within the legal limit to do that. And because no candidate received 50% of the vote, the election will be decided by a secret vote of 180 lawmakers on the first day of the session. And Milne says he might wage an energetic campaign to win legislative support because a majority of voters did not choose Peter Shumlin.
So I think right now all the options are on the table from conceding to taking this to the legislature. Before we're Republicans or Democrats, we're Vermonters. And we're all, I hope, going to look at the facts and think about the future and do what we think is best for Vermonters.
So what's the message of this election and how do these results impact the agenda of Peter Shumlin going forward into 2015? These are some of the questions we have for our guest today, Governor Peter Shumlin. Governor, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Hey, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
You can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. You can give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. What do you think the results of the gubernatorial election tell us about the state of issues in Vermont? Was it a referendum on the policies of Governor Peter Shumlin? What role did low voter turnout play in this election? Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net. But you can also give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. So you had to have been doing polling throughout most of this campaign. Were you surprised at the very end by this very slim margin of victory, or in a sense, did you kind of see it coming?
Well, you know, one thing I do as governor is, and what I love about this job, is going out and talking to Vermonters about all kinds of issues every single day, and I probably spend as much time on the road in the state as anybody. And I've been hearing for months that Vermonters are really concerned about their pocketbooks, and they're fed up. They're really, really sick of it. And what you're hearing is, or what I'm hearing, and I'm sure a lot of other Vermonters are too, is that, you know, they feel like they've been playing by the rules, like they work hard, they haven't seen their incomes change, they're still really seeing no benefit from the recovery that they keep hearing about, and they're really sick of it. And, you know, that's really the message that I heard throughout the campaign, and I know that in addition to that, governors make tough decisions. There are plenty that don't feel that I'm listening and that I'm being inclusive enough in the decisions that we're making. So there were really, but I really think the message of this election is, you know, people are hurting. We got to work harder to grow jobs, economic opportunity, and people are really frustrated by a lack of income growth. They're concerned about how to pay their oil bills, how to put food on the table, how to pay their college debt, or send their kids to college. And, you know, we've got the biggest income gap in this country right now that we've seen in 100 years. The folks who had great resources during the recession have gotten more, and the middle class working Vermonters are hurting.
So if you heard this for the last couple of weeks, did you fail to address those concerns in the latter part of the campaign?
Well, you know, let's remember that as tough as this campaign was, and I'm taking the message, you know, message received. We've got a lot of work to do. We did get the most votes. And, you know, I'm proud that we won. This was a very tough year for incumbents around America. It was a very tough year for me. The message is very clear. They want me, Vermonters want me, to be more inclusive in the decisions we're making, to really think out what we're doing, and to be a lot clearer about the direction that we've got to go in.
So as you look back on some of the issues that perhaps that didn't happen on, do you feel that perhaps you were not as inclusive as you should have been? Is that part of the message that you say you're hearing?
I think there's a lot of messages. Frustration about the economy, frustration about, you know, just the economic outlook for most working Vermonters, frustration about specific issues. You know, I could be over in Addison County and folks would say, you know, Governor, I agree with a lot of what you're doing with universal pre-K. I'm thrilled you're moving to renewable energy. I'm glad that you're actually, you know, committed to doing something about our heroin problem and rebuilding our downtowns. But I'm really mad at you about the gas pipeline, so I'm not voting for you. And I could be in another community and they'd say, you know, I like what you're doing in the following things, but I won't forgive you for what happened at Berlin Pond, so I'm not voting for you there. Or they'll say, you know, I agree with a lot of direction, but I'm mad about wind turbines, and, you know, you haven't listened to us on that, so I'm not voting for you there. So there was some of that. But I think the bigger piece is, you know, you got to be careful when you're a leader not to get so far ahead of the troops on big issues that they feel like you turn your head back and they're just not there behind you. And I think there's some of that going on.
What would be the best example of that, do you think? Is it your work on healthcare? When you say that, what comes to mind?
Well, certainly healthcare is one of them, but I think it's generally a sense that we have been very bold about the policy initiatives that we've been leading forward. And, you know, we're doing a lot of good work, but I think people feel generally like we're not being as inclusive as we should be as we make those decisions.
I spoke on Wednesday with retired Middlebury College political science professor Eric Davis, and he told me that he felt the election was a referendum on your first two terms in office.
A lot of people, for a variety of reasons, decided they did not want Peter Shumlin continuing for another term as governor, whether it was disagreement with him on the issues, whether it was not liking him personally and perhaps mistrusting him, whether it was the sense that the economy is not doing as well as it should be in Vermont. You add all of those things together, and Shumlin was able to get only somewhere between, it appears, 46% and 47% of the vote.
You know, the thing you mentioned, economic issues, property tax burdens, and yet throughout the campaign, you know, you didn't have a really concrete proposal to deal with increasing burden of property taxes. Your idea was to go talk with local communities, make sure they understand what they're going to be facing the next year. But there really wasn't a concrete plan on the table. Do you regret not having one?
Well, I actually disagree with that. I think we do have a concrete plan, and I think we're implementing it. And, you know, anyone that thinks that there's going to be a simple solution to our school spending problem just isn't telling the truth. This is going to take some time to right the ship, and we're going to have to do it in a very thoughtful way without destroying one of the best public education systems in the country and without destroying opportunity for all of our children. So we all wish that there was a simple solution. There is nobody walking around Vermont that I've met yet who has a viable plan in their pocket that would solve the problem. So, you know, that's the challenge we're facing. What's the problem? The problem is, as I said many times during the campaign, we've got a spending problem. You know, we've got 30,000 fewer students in Vermont than we had just a few decades ago. We've gone from 110,000 students to 80,000 students. We have more administration, more staff that we're supporting, more costs in our schools than we had then. And we've done nothing to change the dynamic. Now, my view is that a top-down sort of consolidation, you know, reorganization plan isn't easy to do in a way that will actually solve the problem. I'm open to any ideas, but I just, you know, there is no silver bullet out there that's gone flying by that anyone from any party, frankly, has grabbed onto. So what we're doing is, my Secretary of Education, Rebecca Holcomb, is for the first time, we're not just having meetings, we're actually doing something that's never happened before in Vermont. We're going in and sharing the data, where a community might be now, where they'll be in 5 years based on our student count, where they'll be in 10 years. And we're doing this with select boards, with school boards, and anyone will come. And you know, the numbers are eye-popping and saying, we want to partner with you to help you ensure that we change the administrative structure, change consolidation, you know, make the choices that they made, not only to reduce costs for taxpayers, but also to improve quality. Because when school size gets too small, 3, 4, 5, 6 students in a classroom, quality is severely damaged in terms of options for those students. So that's what we've been doing. That's what we've just begun because we now have the data. That's what we're going to continue to do. Second, I'm going to be calling together a summit of legislators from all parties to get around the table and say, listen, what else can we do that's sensible to help us reduce our spending problem?
And House Speaker Shap Smith has an informal group looking at very much of the same issue, right?
Absolutely. And obviously the Speaker will be involved in those conversations. All I'm saying is we are a willing partner, and we've got to deal with our spending problem. It's one of the top priorities for all Vermonters. But for me as governor to pretend that this is there's a simple solution to this that's going to suddenly change our property tax burden, until we get spending under control, not much is going to change. So we're all in this together, and I want to help lead that effort, but there is no simple solution.
So Scott Milne says he might call for a recount in this race. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, that's a decision that Scott needs to make, and I know he's making it now.
He also is encouraging lawmakers to look at the possibility of voting for him, since the election will go to the legislature in January. There is an online petition that's been signed by almost 3,000 people urging Vermont lawmakers to vote for Scott Milne and not for you. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, again, that's a decision that Scott has to make, and I obviously can't make it for him. This is what I know. I'm proud that we got more votes than the other candidate running for governor. In a democracy, the whole point of a democracy is that the person who gets the most votes wins. And, you know, I personally am a little surprised that Scott would take this approach if he chooses to, for the simple reason that he made very clear pre-election that he would support whoever got the most votes. And I obviously have always supported the same policy, so as did Dan Feliciano. So the point is, there's a long tradition in Vermont of actually upholding democracy. It's sort of important, ensuring that the person who got the most votes becomes the elected official. I wouldn't want to serve as governor if I didn't have the most votes in the race.
So when you look at this strategy of saying, well, if you're a House member, take a look at how the gubernatorial vote went in your district or perhaps in your county, and then vote accordingly, you'd say that's not a good measure of to determine how you're going to vote?
Again, this is a decision Scott has to make. I would not take that approach. There's a long tradition in Vermont of supporting the legislature, supporting whoever got the most votes. It's been a bipartisan approach. You know, when I've been through this before. When I ran for lieutenant governor, it was myself, Anthony Polina, and Brian Duby. Anthony Polina and I got many, many more votes, if you put us together, if you make Scott's argument, than did Brian Duby. But obviously, we supported the person. We asked the legislature to support the person who got the most votes. It was Brian Duby.
Let's talk to Matt in Burlington. Hi, Matt. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Governor Shumlin, like I said, my name is Matt. I'm with the Healthcare as a Human Right campaign. And, you know, people didn't turn out because we were not inspired to turn out. What we need now in order to regain our trust in the political process and our trust in you is leadership. We need you to come out with a strong proposal for how we're going to transform our healthcare system and make healthcare a human right. That is an equitably financed system that includes all people and all care, and away from the for-profit system that isn't working for our communities now. Our question is, can we count on you to lead us in this direction?
And before you answer that, let me just say we've gotten a number of emails exactly on this same subject, because there have been a number of articles in the last few days saying, what's the future of single payer? What's the message here? We have an email from Steph who said, I voted for you, Governor Shumlin, and believe the message of this election, that it's time for you to double down and start working as hard as you can for single payer. John wrote us, many people chose to sit this election out. People won't stand up for you unless you stand up for single payer. We have another one from Lee, who was concerned about not enough support for single payer. You know, it's kind of interesting. In your kickoff address, you made it very clear single payer was the issue of this campaign. And then it seemed to just disappear. And you ran all these TV ads about GMOs and renewable energy. We didn't see a word about health care.
Well, you know, I really disagree with that assessment. I talked about single-payer health care throughout this campaign. And in every form it came up. And it was discussed, health care, the future health care in Vermont, I think, was discussed at every single debate we had. In fact, we had one debate where we did almost nothing but talk about this. Now, listen, I've got a long history since I've been in public service of believing and supporting a single-payer health care plan. Two things that we're trying to accomplish. The first is to reduce the crippling rising cost of health care. And this really matters, because if you take the message from this election, which was we're frustrated about our pocketbooks, there are two things that are really holding back Vermonters' incomes, for sure, that I've got a responsibility as governor to deal with. One is property tax, school spending, and we just talked about that. The other is health care costs. And I said this throughout the campaign, and we talked about it tremendously. The biggest obstacle to income growth for Vermonters, in my view, is the fact that our health care costs are rising faster than our incomes. And how many times did you hear me say, the math is simple. Right now, Vermonters spend 20 cents every dollar they make on health care. If health care costs grow in this decade at the same rate they did in the last decade, that number doubles. That's not a recipe for prosperity, and I don't think there's very many Vermonters who think it is. So we've got to get this right. In terms of the single-payer public finance model, I've also said I believe it would help Vermont tremendously to go to that system. Why? Because the way we pay for health care is also broken and wrong. I believe that everyone should have health care because they're a Vermonter, because they live in this Green Mountain State. It should not be, as I said many times, it should not be a privilege. It should be a right. But the second piece is the way we pay for health care is broken, because right now under the premium system, some people pay, some people don't, and those who pay, who refuse to pay, are paid for by those who agree to pay. And that's not a fair system. I don't think you develop that from scratch. So I know I sound a little bit like a broken record. We've talked about this a lot during the campaign. But, you know, I really want to believe that this is the right thing for Vermont. Having said that, we're developing a plan. It's tough work. It's one of the hardest things you've asked me to do, to move from a premium-based system to one that rewards healthcare outcomes, but also is publicly financed, is paid for by all of us based on our ability to pay. And we're working really hard to get that plan together. It's tough work. We'll get it done, and we'll be presenting it to the legislature in January.
Today on the program, our guest is Governor Peter Shumlin. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. When we come back, we're going to take a look at how these election results might influence the governor's agenda starting in January. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today is Governor Peter Shumlin. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. You were talking about how difficult it is to put together a financing plan for single payer. We got another email from Pam about single payer. I'm a lifelong diehard Democrat, have voted for you more than once, but not this year. You were the best candidate on the ballot, but I withheld my vote in the governor's race because of concerns over health care reform. Pam goes on to say that she's getting her policies from Vermont Health Connect, but the cost of the policy has gone up by a factor of 3 or 4. And she was very discouraged that you didn't have a concrete proposal. Vermonters have earned their place at a job with decent pay and good benefits. They have a reason to be skeptical when you didn't outline a specific plan, because she thinks it looks like there's potential for a hefty tax increase on the middle class. So as you look back on it now, was it a mistake not to say, here's a way that we could finance single payer?
Well, listen, I'm receptive to the comments and the criticism that Stephanie's just made. My problem is, Bob, we don't have it ready. And I know nobody believed that during the election, or I should say my opponents tried to suggest that we weren't being truthful. But we really are working very hard to get this right. It would be a big mistake to go out with a plan that wouldn't work. And frankly, if we learned anything from the Affordable Care Act, it's that, you know, you don't go out with things that won't work. So we're drilling down really hard to try to get this right. Let me tell you why it's hard. I have said many times that I believe that this is a recipe for huge economic success if we can get it right. It obviously runs a risk of being a real economic disaster if we don't get it right, since healthcare is such a large part of our economy. So we're required not only to figure out how we would pay for it, but then also hire much smarter economists than we are to drill down in to make sure that it doesn't do anything to hurt incomes of Vermonters. It doesn't do anything to hurt businesses, particularly small businesses, which make up 80% of Vermont's economy, and to make sure that it actually benefits our economy, that the assumptions that we've made about it are in fact true. So what we've done is come up with a number of scenarios that we've given to our economists, who are very good, and they're drilling down into that. So the answer is, I more than anyone would have wished that we could have gone out there with a plan that says, this works, here's our plan, what do you think, Vermonters? We just couldn't do it because we're not there yet. Now, I can't deny, going to the first part of her statement, everyone knows how frustrating the Affordable Care Act has been for us to implement, the website and all the rest. We have a fairly limited team in my staff, obviously. It's not like a huge state where you got hundreds and hundreds of staffers. We had to dedicate ourselves some of the work that we would have gotten done to get this piece ready, the finance piece. We've had to put the team on making sure that our website works for open enrollment starting November 15. And as you know, we've had ongoing challenges with that website. It's been a nightmare. So long and short of it is, two things happened. One, it's much harder to do this in terms of getting a plan together that works than we thought, and we need good economists to be able to get the data to ensure that it's a positive. And secondly, we've been a little distracted by the Affordable Care Act website, which has been a huge disappointment for me and everybody else in Vermont.
So you said earlier in the program that one of the messages from this election was you need to slow down a little bit with these bold issues that you're pursuing. So how does that translate into your goal to have Vermont become the first state in the country to implement a single-payer health care system in 2017? Do you interpret the election results to be you got to take your foot off the throttle a little bit here?
I really don't think that this election was about one issue. I think it was about all the issues. This election was really about Vermonters being discouraged that they're just not seeing economic growth, that they're working harder than ever. They're playing by the rules. They're doing all the things that we ask folks to do, and they aren't seeing their incomes go up. Paying bills is harder, not easier, than it was before. And there are a lot of reasons that contribute to that. So I think we got to be careful not to say, you know, this was an election all about property taxes, or this was an election all about health care, or this was an election all about a gas pipeline. This was an election about a lot of things. Throw into it that I think a lot of Vermonters felt like we haven't been as inclusive as we should be. I haven't been in the decisions that we've made. And I think you have a recipe for the kind of results that we got. Now, I want to emphasize, it is disappointing that we got the results that we did. I'm humbled by it. I take it very, very seriously. I love this state more than anywhere on earth, and I want to serve as governor because I want to make it a better place. I'm one of the few governors that actually supports a two-year term. I've always said, if we're not heading in the right direction and Vermonters want change, I just assume be the first person to know about it because we're trying to accomplish a lot of things here. And I think the answer from this election was, Governor, we're going to give you enough votes to keep going. We want you to continue, but we want you to change the way that you're doing some things, to listen more carefully to us, to be more inclusive, to examine things more carefully. We're not necessarily saying your assumptions are wrong. We're saying, listen and don't leave us behind.
So do you take that message to be you're moving too fast on some of these issues?
No, I don't know if it's too fast. I think that there's tremendous nervousness and fear about the state of the economy, about jobs, about pocketbook issues. And when you layer on all kinds of bold changes that you're trying to make to try and improve that, and you can't tell people exactly how it's going to work, you get more fear than you do hope. And I think that's what we got in this election.
How much do you think that the rocky rollout of Vermont Health Connect, how much does that undermine support for single payer in Vermont?
It has undermined support a lot because people confuse the two. You know, right through the campaign, one of my opponents seemed to confuse it every time he spoke about health care. People think that the Affordable Care Act, which obviously wasn't passed by the state of Vermont but was passed by Congress, signed into law by the president, that whatever its strengths and weaknesses are and the website problems that I and everybody else that tried to build a website have had, is single payer. And it's not. The notion of single payer is that we move to a simpler system, one that costs us less, covers everybody, and is publicly financed so that you have health care because you're a resident of the Green Mountain State. You don't need subsidies. You don't need all the other things that the Affordable Care Act requires because they're trying to follow the health care premium system.
Are you confident that Vermont Health Connect is going to be ready for business when the open enrollment period starts in, it's about a week or so?
I'm hopeful.
What does that mean, hopeful?
It means that I've been discouraged so many times by this website that I'll believe it when I see it. What I've been told by my folks who are working really hard on this is that we will be ready for open enrollment on November 15.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Elizabeth in Orwell. Hi, Elizabeth. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for taking my call. The number one issue on my mind, and I think many people's minds, that affects everybody, black, white, critters, ecosystems, is climate change, and it seems to be missing from the discussion. Pipelines leak methane, which contribute to climate change. That's proven fact. There's all kinds of reports, new science out on the toxicity of leakage from pipes and how it affects people's health. The pipeline, there's eminent domain issues. People's property is going to be taken. And you lost my vote on this issue, Governor, and I voted for you in the past. And I feel like you have this amazing opportunity right now to either leave a legacy of having tunnel vision and basically selling out the state for the fossil fuel industry to the fossil fuel industry, or being a real leader of the nation and showing the planet how America can do the right thing and stand up to the fossil fuel industry. We're inventive. There's all kinds of resources here. We don't need the pipeline, and you could be a hero. This is like your chance to change, you know, sort of the shift of where things are headed, either down a really slippery, dark slope or moving towards something that's actually genuinely renewable and will ensure the safety for all of us and protect our environment.
Okay, Elizabeth, many thanks for your phone call. I really have two questions for you. How much did your support for this pipeline cost you over in the western part of the state? The other thing is, we saw a study today, a survey of towns where there had been wind projects proposed for the state of Vermont, and of, I believe it was 52 towns where wind projects were either proposed or at least considered, 46 of the towns voted against you, and these are towns that previously either supported you or gave you a lot more support in the 2012 election. How much did the pipeline vote cost you?
You know, I'm going to try avoid being the political pundit, because I think there's political pundits who are a lot better than that than I am. My job is to serve as governor. What I've got to do as governor is make a lot of very, very tough decisions. And I do that, you know, unlike being in Congress, I've got to do that every single day. And every decision I make is susceptible to making people like Elizabeth or others who have wind projects around them obviously annoyed at me and not support me. And I understand that. And I've got to listen, and I've got to be inclusive, and I do, and I will do that even better going forward. That's my pledge. But I got to say, this is a great example of why my job is tough. I support wind because I feel so passionately about climate and everything that Elizabeth said in terms of our challenge ahead. I don't think there's a governor in America who is putting more leadership into moving to renewables, into buttoning up our existing buildings and homes, into moving to electrical vehicles from gas-driven vehicles. Every policy that I make, I'm trying to push this envelope forward because I think it's the biggest threat to our future, as Elizabeth just said. And, you know, having managed three climate change-induced storms, you know, I see the pain. I see what it's doing, and there's more of that ahead. So having said that, this is an example of my challenge. You build out wind because you got to build wind and solar to get this right, and people obviously disagree in some parts of the state. On the pipeline, you know, we will disagree on the best way to get there. And Elizabeth's right. We need to get off of petroleum. We need to get off of oil-based systems as quickly as we know how. No disagreement there. My own view on the pipeline is not going to make Elizabeth any happier, but I believe that if we move that pipeline down the western side of the state from a climate change perspective, it's going to move Vermonters from really dirty number two oil that they're burning in their heating systems right now in their basements to a less toxic fuel that reduces carbon emissions more quickly than the oil we're burning. Now, if we could quickly flick a switch and put up enough solar panels and enough wind projects and all the things we need to do to make that the choice, I'd make it. But we can't. We can't put GE Electric in Rutland and other big companies, you know, immediately on renewables and fix all their problems. So I see the gas pipeline as a positive for the environment. I know we disagree, but it's going to bring a cleaner fuel to Vermonters. And from a pocketbook issue, and let's not forget, this election was about real challenges Vermonters having paying their bills. It's going to cut the cost of their heating fuel in half. It's going to cut the cost of doing business in half for those that are right now burning dirty oil. And I just think it's the right pragmatic decision to make. Now, it doesn't mean that we disagree on the goal of getting off of oil and petroleum-based products. It does mean that I've got to be pragmatic, and we can't just flick the switch and do that. We've got to do it in a thoughtful way. I think the pipeline on the western side is both good from a climate change perspective and good from an economic perspective for a part of the state that struggled to grow jobs and economic opportunity.
So what do you say to people like Elizabeth who say, okay, we understand you can't flick a switch and go to renewable energy for all these energy needs. But on the other hand, this is Elizabeth probably talking, do you really need to put a pipeline in place, an infrastructure in place that's going to be there for the next 20, 30, 40 years? Making a long-term decision. I think some of the people who oppose the pipeline feel like you're making a really long-term decision here.
Well, we make long-term decisions about energy all the time. When we run a transmission line, which we often have to do by eminent domain to get electricity to people's homes, we make a big decision. By growing out renewables, which I've been doing, we've got the fastest growth of solar of any state in the country, more solar jobs per capita this year than any state in the country. When we do that, we reduce the need for big transmission lines coming in. And we've reduced transmission costs in Vermont by $200 to $400 million just since I've been building this out. So the point is, we are not going to all agree on the best way to move the climate change agenda forward. What you have in me as a governor is a governor who is committed to not only doing this and doing it right, but putting dollars in Vermonters' pockets while we do it. In terms of the infrastructure argument, Chittenden and Franklin County have gas pipelines in their counties for years, and it hasn't had an adverse environmental impact on them. So I think we sometimes might oversell the infrastructure of a gas pipeline.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Robert in Bethel. Hi, Robert. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Bob. Hi, Governor.
Hey.
Governor, I just think you are an excellent, excellent futurist, and I give you kudos for that. But right now in Vermont, for the last 4 years or so that I've been watching, actually 10 years, but real concerned with things over the last four, we need a pragmatist, somebody that gets serious things done. I mean, you just said, quote unquote, "I'll believe it when I see it," regarding the Healthcare Connect program. That, to me, that comment is actually kind of despicable. We've been through this. You've been promoting this one-payer system for the last three-year campaign, and you don't even have a budget for it. You've been working on it for 3 or 4 years. Are we supposed to say we'll believe it when we see it and trust that? So there's a major trust factor going on with pragmatism and futurists, and I think with this election, it's proven to you that you've gone way down the path of being a futurist rather than a pragmatist, and that's what Vermont needs. People aren't, quote-unquote, living in Vermont. They're actually just existing, and that's a big quote.
Well, Robert, I think you raise good points, and I just want to make clear that not only have I been a pragmatist governor, but I'm pledging to continue to be. And let me be very specific, because this is not the sexy stuff that gets talked about. I've managed four consecutive budgets without real challenges, shortfalls, balanced them without raising broad-based taxes, income taxes, sales taxes, rooms, meals taxes on Vermonters. Those are tough choices. That's a pragmatist governor making tough choices. We have closed the gap, and we've still got our AAA bond rating. The reserves are still sitting there. We've done it in a fiscally responsible manner. In terms of transportation infrastructure, that's a really pragmatic issue that when I came on as governor was a real challenge to us. We've reduced the number of decrepit bridges in this state, bridges you shouldn't travel on, from 34% to 22% by passing two of the biggest transportation budgets in the history of the state and getting out there and doing it. We've reduced the number of decrepit paved road surfaces, paving, which has been terrible in the state and been neglected for years, from 22% decrepit, insufficient, to 12%. And we just spread more pavement this last summer than any time, so that number will continue to drop. We have ensured that we have reduced power costs for Vermonters. By pushing through the merger of CV and Green Mountain Power, doing the other things that infrastructure that we've made, we're one of the few states in the Northeast that actually saw its power bills for Vermonters who are struggling to pay their bills go down for the last 2 years. I know it's not sexy stuff, but that isn't despite my leadership. It's because I was actively involved in helping that merger, helping those things happen to reduce costs for Vermonters. We've gone out and taken on the downtown reconstruction in the state in ways that haven't happened before. So if you go into downtown Barrie or St. Albans or Rutland or Brattleboro, you see storefronts and restaurants and really pragmatic things happening there. We've ensured that we've actually built out renewable energy. That's pragmatic and good for our future. And, I could go on. My point is, I am a business person. I love the state. I'm as pragmatic a person as I hope you'll find. That's where I, frankly, some people are mad at me, like the ones who just called in about the gas pipeline or wind or whatever. But, you know, I have been pragmatic. I'm going to double down on being pragmatic. That's first what a governor's got to be: fiscally responsible, pragmatic, and listening to Vermonters about what their concerns are. And that's the message I've received from this election. Redouble those efforts, and I will.
Today on the program, our guest is Governor Peter Shumlin. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today is Governor Peter Shumlin. We're looking at the results from Election Day and how it will influence the governor's agenda in 2015. Your thoughts? 1-800-639-2211. Governor, we got this email from Jesse, who wrote us, "I'm a longtime supporter of the governor's, and I sat out this election believing that he would win by a wide margin. So I don't want anyone, especially Governor Shumlin, running away with the idea that voters have spoken." Voter turnout was very low in this election. I think it's the lowest in decades, in fact. How much was that a factor?
Well, it was obviously the lowest turnout in the history of Vermont, as I understand it, or that's what I've been told. And, you know, that's a big disappointment for all of us. Our democracy is only as good as the folks who show up at the polls and exercise their right to vote. And, you know, it's got to be concerning to all of us that it was such a terribly low turnout. Having said that, you know, any elected leader has to respond to the people that show up and vote. That's my job. And the people that elect you are the folks that you work for. What I really take from this election is, listen, I mean, I don't want to pretend that everything's beautiful. This was a very clear message to me, and I take full responsibility for the message, that while we're doing some things right, a lot of people are concerned about the direction that we're headed and are feeling left behind and are incredibly anxious about their pocketbooks and a lot of other issues. So, you know, I get Jesse's message. I wish that more folks had turned out to vote. I was talking to Dan Feliciano when he called to concede the race and congratulate me. And he said, you know, I had a lot of folks who voted for me because they were mad at you. And they had voted for you in the past, you know. So some folks didn't vote for me because they were mad about issues. Some folks didn't show up. But we had a very low turnout. And it's always, you know, discouraging when we have a very low turnout.
Let's turn to Pete in Burlington. Hi, Pete. Welcome to the program. Pete, are you there? Well, we're having some problems with Pete, so.
He's got a great name.
Can you hear me?
Pete. Oh, there you go, Pete. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate the time. Governor, I'm a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat. I didn't vote for you this time. I did a write-in vote for a former governor. You talked about being a businessman. For me, there's a disconnect, not so much because I'm left behind financially, but as a Democrat, I'm left behind because of things that are, for me, that are traditionally Democratic. Seem to be missing. It's more like you're a businessman technocrat. The passion is missing. I know you are who you are, and you can't change that. But a lot of the images as I see are you're with the head of, say, Green Mountain Power, but not with the food shelf people. There just seems to be a disconnect between the social justice of Democrats and what we care about, and either it's just an image issue. There is a disconnect for me, and I think there are a lot of Democrats feel the same. It's not one thing. Like you said, it's a lot of things. And I just would hope that you could reflect upon your base and the things that we're passionate about. Thank you.
I will, because, Pete, I got to tell you, I'm passionate about the same things that you are. And, you know, by the way, I'm a big supporter of the food shelf. And if you talk to the folks who are doing such a good job in Vermont, getting food out to the shelves and you know, I've helped with fundraisers and all the rest, you'll find from them you know, I do a lot of events to ensure that we continue to take care of those who are vulnerable in the state, those who don't have enough to eat. We got 100,000 Vermonters who are food insecure, and I've implemented a lot of policies on that in that area, while Congress, frankly, has cut back on the money that has been sent to us in the past to help us support the food bank and the other good organizations are getting food out to homeless folks and or folks that are just hungry and food insecure. So we've both implemented policies in that area to help get more help to folks that are struggling to pay for their groceries and to support our infrastructure in Vermont. I'm going to continue to. But message received, and I thank you for telling me how you feel.
Let's turn to Joe Henry in Isle of Mott. Hi, Joe Henry. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I have always voted Democratic, and for the first time I've had to vote. I was one that voted for Feliciano. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I do that is the governor's reluctance to tax the rich by cutting everything from DCF to everything else, while the rich don't suffer the same kind of burden that everybody else, and also for his support of the F-35s and their $1.6 trillion, where I live in Grand Isle County and we don't even have a high school, and we're spending this kind of money on little toys for rich people, while I pay $6,000 in property tax here in Isle of Mott. You know, and I started here at $795 a year in property tax. Now I'm up to $6,000, which I don't mind. If it's for tax, it's for educating our children, I have no problem doing that. We'll continue to do that. But the problem is the rich need to pay their fair share.
Thanks. Okay, Joe Henry, thanks for your phone call. You've got a big budget problem coming up in January, a budget gap of something in excess of $100 million. You know there are going to be people in the legislature who are going to say part of the solution, not all of it, but part of the solution, higher taxes on the wealthy. Is that an option?
Well, I just want to, you know, first of all, I appreciate Joe Henry sharing his views with us. I just want to point out that we have the most progressive income tax in America. We are taxing our richest residents, and we're asking them to pay more than anybody else in the state, and they do. And, you know, my only point is that's the right thing to do. I support it. I often hear in Vermont, you know, why don't we change it so that capital gains is taxed at the same rate as ordinary income? People sometimes miss that we're doing that. We changed that, actually. A few years ago. So we have one of the most progressive income taxes in America. We ask our wealthiest to pay the most. And my point is, I'm not hearing from anyone in Vermont that they have a lot of extra money for us to go after. We're going after the few wealthy people that we have. They are paying more than everybody else. They pay a huge percentage of our income tax right now. About 4,000 people pay, you know, a huge percentage of our income tax in Vermont, and that's a good thing. But you can't do it twice, and that's my only point. You can't say, well, we're asking the wealthiest to pay more than everybody else, which we do, and now we can go and do that again. There's a point where, as you know, income tax is portable, and where you know, they just will lose the folks that are paying the most.
Let me ask you if this is a fair statement. Based on the election results, you might not have lost your desire to have single-payer implemented in Vermont in 2017 or your support for single-payer in general. But the reality of the election results are that it's not going to happen that fast.
So I would say no to that. I would say only because I don't think that what I've communicated or I've tried to communicate is specific to one issue. It's specific to all the issues and, frankly, the concerns that you're hearing from the callers right now, whether it's property taxes, the F-35, natural gas pipeline, you know, host wind turbines. We've had calls on all kinds of issues that various reasons why people didn't vote for me. I don't think what they're saying is, Governor, stop making tough decisions and stop making decisions that are going to benefit Vermont. What they're saying is, please do this in a way that's more inclusive, that explains more clearly what you're doing and why you're doing it, and examine everything that you're doing. And that's exactly what I'm going to do. That's what voters have asked me to do, and that's what I will do. It doesn't mean that I'm going to change what I believe. It means that I'm going to look very carefully at what we believe and make sure that we're going to do this in a way that's pragmatic, that's going to grow economic opportunity, and where Vermonters feel like they're aboard of the ship that we're sailing to ensure that we're gaining prosperity and gaining economic ground.
Governor Peter Shumlin, many thanks for being on the program today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
That is Vermont Edition for today. On Monday, we'll discuss the recent decision to outfit all Burlington police officers with video recording devices and the role of video in examining the actions of police officers. Burlington Police Chief Michael Sherling is our guest on Monday. Be sure to listen at noon on Monday. Our producers are Patty Daniels, Rick Sangari, and Sage Van Wing. We have production assistance from Aaron Lucy. Mary Williams directed the show. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.